Hello again, friends. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much for joining in here. We're going to continue with the selection of the time. And Nichiren at this point is going to, because he's explaining to his interlocutor, which is really himself, asking questions of himself in the stead, if you will, of interlocutors. Being the nature of Japan at the time, communications with people across Japan, whether they be his inner circle of teaching monks or lay monks or the laity in its entirety, word had to be sent through communications on horseback or on foot. So as an expedient, Nichiren often uses this device of question and answer, trying to anticipate the kinds of questions, quite scholarly questions, that might be asked of him to legitimize the doctrine, his doctrine, the doctrine of the Lotus Sutra, the Tendai Lotus doctrine, and the lineage all the way back to Shakyamuni's doctrine, which is what he's trying to adhere to the letter. And in this part, he's going to demonstrate the degree to which something that we know about human nature, that certainly isn't new, but there's this tendency that we have, especially when dealing with powers of authority, right? I want to remind you once again, you know, that we in the West, we grow up with a lot of rhetoric about monks being these docile, pacifist, secluded entities. But I want to remind you that from even in the West, monks and knights of the round table, you know, the Western European history, all of this was based, religiously based. And so power always has vied between the elite wealth and the elite military. In some form, those two jostle for the supreme rule over everybody else. It's a very, very dictatorial, very authoritarian structure, right? And we still have it today. You can look at Bolsonaro in Brazil, and you look at Turkey. Look all over the world. Do your research. And I know in this country there's a strong bias to what goes on in our North American sphere, in our relationship with the UK, but there's not a lot of easily accessible broadcast information, the media as it were, about the structures of power in other countries, unless we find ourselves embroiled with them, and then we get that rhetoric and that propaganda. And I'm not saying it's all negative, I'm just saying the nature of information may require that you do a little more digging. And I'll leave it at that. But I think even superficially, we know that there's dictatorial relationships in other countries. I'm sure you're aware of Iran, as it's a state, or a state as in a nation, that is completely run by a cleric with a very powerful military. So this duality has existed time immemorial, right? And monks, quote monks, I would refer you to even the folklore of the Shaolin. The monks have been very much embroiled as a warring or warrior force. Sometimes the entity of monk and military warrior, the difference between the two has been very, very, very slim. Sometimes they are one and the same, but most often you have this kind of I wanted to say triad, but it's more like a two and a half ad, because you have the wealth, certainly, the military, certainly, and the philosophical or religious, certainly. But sometimes the two, the three blur into each other. And so I only bring that up because Nichiren is living in a shogunate. Okay, it's a fiefdom. People are either worthless or they're warriors, or we keep them around and feed them because they keep our stories alive, our justification, our holy justifications, our religious, deeply spiritual sense of ourselves intact. And that's very important to them because, especially throughout Asia, and I don't know, in the West, I've not been in the military myself, so some of you could answer this question better than I. You hear the rhetoric of fight for God and country, and so God in the Christian sense, and the many Christian religions in North America, certainly, and South America, Central, but you know what I'm saying, in the West generally, is a rhetorical staple of military movement. And you know what, even when US invaded Iraq, it was to counter the axis of evil, right? It's very religiously it's inculcated into the culture of war, right? But to what degree do the warriors themselves adhere to that, like the knights of old would be on a crusade for God? There it was super obvious that the religious was behind the war. But today, I think it's a strange, it's kind of a rhetorical device. I don't know how deeply held it is. And I guess you could say the same thing would be true of monks and samurai and warriors. But I have a sense from everything that I've read in and outside of Buddhism that in actuality, that sense of piety, of mission, was really far greater than country. Country existed because of the spiritual mission. Do you see what I'm saying? It kind of trumps it. Sorry, that word now is ever forever going to be messed up. So anyway, I don't want to belabor this point too much, except that it is very much a part of what we're reading. Being aware that the politic of Japan and Nichiren's day was not only politics as far as leadership of the people and selling them an ideal, but very, very much a part of daily life and the reason for being. And so the politicking, the convictions, and the making new arguments resounds not only with the politician, the elite leaders, but more through the monks and the military. So the military becomes kind of confusing to the commoner as to whether it's the arm of, it's not the arm of justice like it would be in the West, it's the arm of leadership. So it's very political. And that leadership has to be based on what? The ideology. So there you have religion and governance being bedfellows, if you will. So all of that, again, is to say that when you have these major players, excuse me, in the philosophical realm, like we read about Dengyo, really clearing up a lot of misinformation in Buddhism and putting the proper order of the teachings correctly to be, he was very much a scholar, academician, historian, and a person of great, great merit, recognized and by not only his scholarship, but being able to refute all of the mistaken views of the other schools of thought around him. That gave not only him, Dengyo, but his entourage, his courtesan, his establishment of the correct school of Tendai school in Japan, in the location of Mount Hiei. But then you add all of that together and it becomes more than just the man Dengyo. It becomes the teachings and documentation of Dengyo's wealth of understanding of the profundity and the power of the Lotus Sutra, and therefore this being the teaching to lead the country and its people and its military and its future into prosperity, health, wealth, all of it. The good life comes from this teaching, this school, this temple, this mountain. You see how it becomes this huge geopolitical, economic reality that everything, all the other powers in the country have to align themselves with. So if you're Dengyo, for example, you are extremely honored. And so the people and their donations and their support, their food, the farmers, the rulers of the country who control the governance of the people, and the military who enforce and protect, all of them work in unison to support Dengyo, because Dengyo doesn't rule in affairs of state, but Dengyo's opinion about what the ruler is doing and the military is doing, down to each individual farmer and so how they are doing in their lives, has to congeal into a national mind. And everyone has to agree and operate within that. That is the law. Rather than section 204, paragraph 9, says blah, 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 like we understand the law today when we get a speeding ticket, right? There's numbers and blah, blah, blah. The law then was far more, even though they had edicts, which you could say are similar, they were all based on the law of the philosophical identity of the country, which was then enacted through the ruler, military, and common people. Does that make sense? So, with all of that in mind, I'm actually going to get to a point. Hold on. Okay, here it comes. There were people in these elite classes, whether they were the wealthy class, the landowners and so forth, the military leaders, or other monks who were in their process of gathering knowledge and deepening their understanding of the teachings, who would the most important of those and the most qualified of those who would go and travel to China to read the actual documents that the Chinese temples and practitioners might have. They didn't have a library. They didn't have Amazon.com. So they actually had to travel to go to where these documents were being kept and protected, right? In order for them to study firsthand. And so the more this is required, the more support that the head temple had to have in order to facilitate these other monks to go and study. And some of them would come back, like all humans, and feel like, well, you know, Dengyo, kind of tired of hearing him talk. I think I could do a better job. I think, I read this other stuff, and I think it's more valid than what Dengyo's saying. Or I think Dengyo's right, and he knows he's an incredible scholar, But I like the power that he has. Man, all these military leaders and rulers and real estate and blah, 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 all these great, powerful families, they all listen to him. I want to have that power. Boy, if I had that power, I'll tell you, I'd be able to do this and that, and I'd like to live in that estate. I'm tired of living in my hovel, you know, and studying all the time. It's the story of humankind, right? Avarice, greed, wanting power, money, control. And so you would have, and we've already read in the Selection of the Time where this has happened repeatedly, where certain scholars have gone off the rails and said, made complete fabrications up to say, nope, this is better than that, and that's better than this, and you can't prove me wrong because I traveled for 10 years and I read all this stuff and you have no access to it. So what would you know? How would you know if I'm right or wrong? I'm telling you I'm right because I went there and that is documented and so on and so forth. And so they could pull it off if they were convincing enough, if they had enough of an inner circle that could help them convince. And if the, you know, Dengyo got old, Dengyo died and passed on his teachings to the next in line. And that guy maybe wasn't as charismatic, even though he fully understood and believed the scholarship of Dengyo and the Tendai school. He wasn't as charismatic, or his descendant follower. We're talking over multiple lifetimes here. These other challengers to the throne, if you will, although that's a bad analogy, to the leadership of the philosophical core of the nation, if they were telling complete lies, as long as they constructed them in a logical way, nobody could refute them. Once the one person who was able to refute them was no longer in the picture. And they would usurp control and go, aha, see, our school is the best. All that other stuff, yeah. But, you know, it was mistaken. We're the right ones. It's easy to understand how that can happen, especially if you look at the component of time while all this is going on. Unfortunately, what pertains to this Go show here and what we're about to read, if I could ever get to it, is that once the lie is established, and this is the other kind of the other edge of the sword, if you will, that once this this lie or this falsehood is established, more and more documentation gets piled around it to keep it there and justify it until generationally it becomes just known. That's the truth. The lie becomes the truth because nobody contests it. And more than that, many people are busily trying to justify it, making more and then you look back on, wow, look at all the documentation supporting it. Yeah, it must be true. And this is what Nichiren is now faced with in his day, is these other schools that have so much history bolstering up their lies that on the one hand, if he debates them, he can just poof, just pop their balloons in a minute. It's easy. Because he can point to the original mistake. He is a scholar with enough scholarship and study behind him that he can question them on levels that, oh, we hadn't thought of that, oops, and defeat them. So he always wins in debates. But the problem isn't that he can defeat the leaders and embarrass them. The problem is the other two sectors of society. How do you get the word out to all of the common people, A, and B, how are you going to deal with a ruling class that is, maybe you can gain one of their favor and they'll say, okay, you make sense. We'll put you in charge. Boom, suddenly you're in charge, right? But then you've got these other elites who say, how dare you? How dare you mess up my kingdom and what I've been doing all this time? And how dare you, you make my dad look like a bozo? How dare you do that? I'm gonna shut you up. I'm gonna have you exiled. I'm gonna have you, you know, send people out to kill you. Right? That's the situation, plain and simple. So, because this Go show that we're reading now is about the selection of the time, all of this is enmired into the whole process of reforming all these errant views that are, we are now embroiled in a state of affairs where the country's witnessing famines and disasters and invasions and all of these things. And Nichiren is saying, of course you are. Look at the way you've been thinking. Remember what I said earlier? Look at the foundation of your thinking, your ideology, your philosophy that you know brings about the fortune of your life, the land, the country, the people. If it were correct, why would we experience all of this misery? So please listen to what I'm saying. This is not the time for these older ideas and teachings, some of which were valid at the time, but now I can point to you the incredible lies that are being told to you. It's no wonder the country's such a mess. So he's using this inculcated belief system in the systems of government and military and common people and serfdom, and showing them that if their foundational philosophy was correct, they wouldn't be dealing with such terrible life conditions right now. And that if they did as the Buddha taught, and he can point to it directly, and the one statement that you'll hear, you've probably heard many times before, is to follow the law, not the persons. This section of what I'm about to read is going to make that point at all levels. But certainly, he's taking on the leaders of the philosophical core of the heart of Japan and its people and its military and its rulers. He's talking about courageous. He's like the boy, you're right. He's like the boy in the crowd who says, hey, the emperor's naked. He doesn't have new clothes. If you're a Westerner, I'm sure you know that story. If not, look it up, The Emperor's New Clothes. It's a short story, you'll enjoy it. All right, so where we left off, yeah, we were talking again about the placement of the Lotus Sutra as opposed to what the True Word schools would have you believe, the Zen school would have you believe. These are his main counter politicians that he has to cap at the knees in order to get people to hear the truth, right? So we've been talking about Kobo. Here we continue. Though Kobo's disciples and the True Word monks of Toji Temple in Japan may be so poor-sighted that they cannot distinguish black from white with their own eyes, they should trust the sight of others and recognize the misfortunes invited by their own faults. Moreover, where are the precise passages in the Mahavatarchana and the Diamond Crown Sutras that refer to the Lotus Sutra as a childish theory? It's really amazing that people would believe this, by the way, because if you read any sutras, and certainly you've read a few, to hear the words childish theory come out of Shakyamuni's mouth, it just seems like such a non sequitur. It doesn't fit in with anything I've read from Shakyamuni Buddha or any of the bodhisattvas after his passing, Nagarjuna, Vasubandhu, Tendai, Nichiren. I've never heard anyone of those scholars say, well, that's just a childish theory. Like, Shakyamuni was just talking out the side of his mouth that day and he was, you know, giving stories or something. What? No. Every word, we talk about Shakyamuni's words as golden words, right? Precious teachings. For him to have said something was childish, just out of character, isn't it? So this is a very, very important point, because the whole argument of the true word school is based on this belittling of the Lotus Sutra. This takes not only tremendous arrogance, but a reliance on people's ignorance. Right? This is the political part. So Nichiren is saying, show me a quote. Show me where in these sutras that you're claiming are superior that they actually say the Lotus Sutra is childish theory. Show me. Because it's not there. Now, you might find it. You might find it in their doctrines saying that the Lotus Sutra is, but it's not from the Buddha's words. It's not from the Buddha's sutras. It's not from any Bodhisattva sutras. It's from theirs, their own. And Nichiren goes on further to say, let them produce them. He says, even if these sutras should perhaps refer to the Lotus Sutra in those terms, it may quite possibly be an error in translation. Wink, wink. If they can find somewhere in the Mahavacharana Sutra where Mahavacharana Buddha, who is an emanation of Shakyamuni, by the way, says, oh yeah, that final teaching of Shakyamuni's, the Lotus Sutra, is just childish theory. If you can find that in the Mahavacharana and show it to me, then I am telling you, Nichiren is saying, I'm telling you, that's quite possibly an error in translation, meaning that's something they wrote into it to cover their own butts, because that is not part of the sutra, right? So he's going for the throat here, but he has to, right? Such matters, he says, should be examined with great care and attention before they are put forward. Careful what you say. We are told that Confucius thought 9 times before saying one word, and that Tan, the Duke of Chou, would bind up his hair 3 times in the course of washing it, and spit out his food 3 times in the course of a meal, in order not to keep callers waiting. So he's pointing out, now these are non-Buddhist teachings, right? So he's using them to illustrate that we have a long history from China to Japan of being careful with our words. Don't just say stuff because it's convenient, or you're covering up for something, or you're trying to be superior. Don't make it up. Right? Think before you speak. That's been around a long time, hasn't it? Well, so he's using that caution here. Thus we see that even among the men depicted in the non-Buddhist writings who studied ephemeral worldly affairs, those who were wise proceeded with great caution. How then can men like Kobo be so careless and shallow in judgment in matters pertaining to the law? Now the law, as I said earlier, in this context is the law of enlightenment, of awakening, of Buddhism, that lofty law from which we are imbued with our life through the elite, through the rulers, through the government, through the warriors, through the monks, all the way down to the common people and this life and everything in it. That law, which, as we know through Nichiren, is Myoho Renge Kyo. That is the law. But the law has this broader term. This broader term that includes Everything Myoho Rengekyo does, certainly. But it's not identified until the Lotus Sutra, in the latter half of the Lotus Sutra, which is why the sutra is the pinnacle of the teachings, right? It's simple for us to see it because we have all this access, right? We have YouTube. You know, our sangha is the world. Nichiren continues. Such erroneous views of Kobos were handed down until they reached Shokakubo, the founder of the temple called Denbo-in, who stated in his rules of rites for revering the Buddha's relics, quote, "The figure worthy of true respect is the Buddha of the non-dual Mahayana. The three-bodied donkey or ox Buddha is not even fit to draw his carriage. The truly profound doctrines are the teachings of the twofold mandala. The teachers of the four doctrines of the exoteric vehicles are not worthy even to tend the sandals of those who teach the mandala." Now, don't worry. He's going to explain what all of those things mean. And I'm having a tremendously dry orator tool today. My mouth is just sticking all over the place, so I apologize to keep taking drinks here. But I would like to be, for you to be able to discern what it is I'm trying to say, articulate. So this is fascinating. Nichiren goes on, the, quote, teachers of the four doctrines of the exoteric vehicles, end quote, means the monks who teach the Dharma characteristics, the three treatises, flower garland, and lotus doctrines. And by the three-bodied donkey or ox Buddha, means the four Buddhas, the lords of the teachings of the lotus, the flower garland, the wisdom, and profound secret sutras. It's like, it's saying that these Buddhas and monks are not even worthy to act as ox drivers or sandal tenders for such true word teachers' doctrines as Kobo or Shokakubo. Again with the insults, right? They can't claim superiority through the actual sutras themselves, so they debase the other sutras and say they're not even fit to lick our shoes. It's fighting words, isn't it? There was a man in India known as the great arrogant Brahmin, who was born with an innate wisdom and was widely read. Both the exoteric and esoteric teachings of Buddhism were stored up in his breast. And he had both the Buddhist and non-Buddhist writings in the palm of his hand. Even the king and his ministers bowed their heads before him, and the common people looked up to him as a teacher and guide. But in the excess of his arrogance, he went so far as to make himself a dais supported by four legs representing the deities Mahasvara, Vishnu, Narayana, and along with the world-honored one, of great enlightenment, Shakyamuni. Four sages whom the world holds in great honor, seating himself on it when he expounded his doctrines. He was like the true word monks of our time when they spread their mandala with its representations of Shakyamuni and the other various Buddhas and performed their ceremonies of anointment, or like the Zen monks when they declare that the teachings of their school represent a great law that steps upon the head of the Buddha. I bet a lot of you Zen, coming from Zen, didn't know that. At this time, there was a humble monk called the scholar Bhadraruchi, who declared that the Brahmin school should be corrected, that this arrogant Brahmin should be corrected. But neither the ruler or the high ministers nor the common people would listen to such a suggestion. As I was saying earlier, it's don't rock the boat. In the end, the Brahmin charged his disciples and lay supporters to go about spreading countless falsehoods and abusing and beating Bhadraruchi, because he was tired of this fly in the ointment, right? But Bhadraruchi, disregarding the danger to his own life, continued to denounce the Brahmin until the ruler, coming to hate Badaruchi, arranged for him to debate with the Brahmin in hopes of silencing him. Okay, let's get this little noisemaker in here, and you can debate against him, and then finally put his loudmouth to rest. Right? Let's embarrass him in front of everyone. Then he'll shut up. Contrary to his expectations, however, the Brahmin was the one defeated in the debate.
Dope.
It's wonderful when you know the correct way or the true way to do anything, isn't it? At some point, everyone has to acknowledge that it's not you, by the way. This isn't, and this is the point of the arrogance, is what Nichiren is saying, is if it is true regardless of who says it. But are you courageous enough to be the one who says it? The king looked up to heaven, then threw himself down on the ground, lamenting, and said, quote, I have been privileged to hear your words on this matter firsthand and to free myself from my erroneous views. But my father, the former king, was completely deceived by this arrogant Brahmin, and by now has probably fallen into the Avicii hell. So saying, he clung to the knees of the scholar Badaruchi and wept in sorrow. At Badraruchi's suggestion, the Brahmin was placed on the back of a donkey so that he might be led in disgrace throughout India and shown to all. But the negative influence in his heart only grew stronger than ever, and in his living form he fell into the hell of incessant suffering. This is the Brahmin. Was he any different from the followers of the true word and Zen schools in the world today? Ouch! The Chinese meditation master, Sun Xie, stated that the Lotus Sutra, which represents the teaching of the Buddha Shakyamuni, is a doctrine suited for the first and second stages of Buddhism, which correspond to the former and middle days of the law. For the latter day of the law, however, he asserted that one should adopt the universal teaching that he himself had set forth. Here we go again. He declared that if one should try to practice the Lotus Sutra in these present times, one would surely fall into the great Avicii hells of the Ten Directions, because its teachings do not accord with the nature and capabilities of the people of the latter age. Right? You're all too stupid to practice the Lotus Sutra. Don't bother. Do what I'm telling you. He carried out prostrations and penances at the proper hours, six times each day, and observed the four daily meditation periods, conducting himself like a living Buddha. Many people paid him honor, and his disciples numbered more than 10,000. But one young woman dared to recite the Lotus Sutra and to censure him for his doctrines. As a result, he lost his voice on the spot and was reborn as a huge snake that devoured a number of his disciples and lay supporters, as well as girls and young women. And now Shandao and Honen, with their pernicious doctrine that not even one person in 1,000 can be saved by the Lotus Sutra, are just like this man, Sun Xie. So again, he's using folklore and teachings, the non-Buddhist teachings, in order to demonstrate what people already have come to understand, the behavior of people taking place at this high level, that they shouldn't be fooled. Many years have passed now since these great sources of trouble, the Nembutsu, Zen, and true word teachings, came into existence, and one should not underestimate their influence. But I feel that if I speak out against them in this way, there will perhaps be those who will heed my words. Heal. And yet there is something that is more negative influence than these three teachings, so negative influence that it is 100,000, 10,000, million times more difficult to believe. Though the great teacher Chikaku was the third disciple of the great teacher Dengyo, everyone from the ruler on down to the common people believed him to be a more outstanding person than the great teacher Dengyo himself. He made an exhaustive study of the teachings of the True Word School and of the Lotus School, and stated in his writings that the True Word teachings are superior to those of the Lotus Sutra. How could this be? As a result, the community of monks on Mount Hiei, which numbered 3,000, as well as the Buddhist scholars in every province throughout Japan, all came to accept his opinion on this matter. And this is just another example of the political will of those who want to grab power. Generally, always do it at the expense of somebody else's. They find the good manipulators. They find a way to orate away the previous known and to insert themselves as the new authority. This is the history of the world, right? It's no different in Buddhism. The followers of Kobo had thought that although he was their teacher, he had perhaps gone too far when he declared that the Lotus Sutra inferior to the Flower Garland Sutra. But when they saw that the great teacher Chikaku put forth a similar opinion in his exegetical writings, his outside of Buddhism commentaries, they took it as an accepted fact that the True Word teachings were indeed superior to the Lotus Sutra. And this is the problem with the lack of education in a country. If the people are educated from the bottom on up, they have the critical thinking power to see right from wrong or truth from baloney, right? But when people's education is just word of mouth, they're easily swayed. Mount Hiei ought to have been the staunchest opponent to this opinion established in Japan that the True Word teachings are superior to the Lotus Sutra. Yet Chikaku silenced the mouths of the 3,000 monks of Mount Hiei and prevented them from speaking out. And as a result, the True Word School was able to have its way. In effect, the great teacher Chikaku was the foremost ally of Toji, the leading temple of the True Word School. He just folded over, didn't he? Though the Pure Land and Zen schools may have flourished in other countries, they would never have been able to spread throughout Japan in countless kalpas if Enrakuji Temple on Mount Hiei had not given its assent. But the Reverend Anan, known as the first worthy of Mount Hiei, wrote a work called Different Views on the Teaching and the Time, in which he ranked the 9 schools of Buddhism in the order of their superiority, placing the True Word School in first place, the Zen School in the second, the Tendai School in the third, the Flower Garland in the fourth, and so on. Because of this egregious error in interpretation, the Zen School has been able to spread its teachings throughout Japan, bringing the country to the brink of ruin. And Honen was able to propagate the teachings of the Nembutsu School, similarly causing the nation to be imperiled as a result of the opinions put forth by Eshin in the preface to his Essentials of Rebirth in the Pure Land. The Buddha tells us that only the worms born from the body of the lion itself feed on the lion. How true are those words? So that's an interesting observation. He's saying that Buddhism, in its long history of scholarship, could dispel any attack from outside of Buddhist teachings. None of the non-Buddhist teachings could approach the clarity, the understanding, the depth of experience and knowledge in the Buddhist texts. The only place Buddhism could find its enemy is within itself. It's quite a statement. The great teacher Dengyo spent a period of 15 years in Japan studying the Tendai and True Word doctrines on his own. He was endowed by nature with a wonderful degree of understanding and without the aid of a teacher realized the truth. But in order to dispel the doubts of the world, he journeyed to China, where he received instruction in the teachings of the Tendai and the True Word schools. The scholars of China held various opinions, but Dengyo believed in his heart that the Lotus Sutra was superior to the True Word teachings. Therefore, he did not use the word school when referring to the True Word school, but simply spoke of the concentration and insight, Tendai, and the True Word practices of the Tendai school. He decreed that two monks should be ordained each year and should spend a period of 12 years in study on Mount He. In addition, he received an imperial edict designating the Lotus Golden Light and Benevolent King's Sutras as the three scriptures for the protection of the nation, and decreeing that they be read and recited in Shikan Yin. It went on to liken these three sutras to the three treasures of the imperial household, the eternal and foremost treasures of the Japanese nation, which are the sacred jewel, the sacred sword, and the sacred mirror. After Dengyo's passing, the first chief monk of the Tendai school on Mount Hiei, the Reverend Gishin, and the second chief monk, the great teacher Encho, carried on Dengyo's intentions without any deviation. The third chief monk, the great teacher Chikaku, also went to Tang China, where he spent 10 years studying the relative merits of the exoteric and esoteric teachings under 8 distinguished monks. He also studied under monks of the Tendai school, such as Kuang Hu and Wei Chuang, but in his heart, he believed that the True Word school was superior to the Tendai school. He felt that his teacher, the great teacher Dengyo, had not gone into the matter in sufficient detail, and that he had not remained for an extended period in China, and hence had only acquired a rough understanding of the True Word doctrines. So he started plotting back then. After Chikaku returned to Japan, he founded a great lecture hall called Soji-in, west of the Shikan-in in the Toto area on Mount Hiei, in which he established the Thus Come One Mahavarachana of the Diamond Realm as an object of devotion. In front of this image, he composed, on the basis of Shan Wu Wei's commentary on the Mahavarachana Sutra, a 7-volume commentary on the Diamond Crown Sutra, and a 7-volume commentary on the Sisiddhikara Sutra, making a total of 14 volumes. The essence of these commentaries is as follows. Quote, there are two types of teachings. One is called exoteric, which corresponds to the doctrine of the three vehicles. In this worldly truth and the superior truth of Buddhism are not completely fused. The other is called the esoteric, which corresponds to the doctrine of the one vehicle. In this, worldly truth and the superior truth of Buddhism are fused together into a single entity. Myoho Rengekyo, by the way. In turn, there are two types of esoteric teachings. One is called the esoteric teaching of theory. These are the doctrines found in works such as the Flower Garland, Wisdom, Vimalakirti, and Lotus. No. Well, first half of the Lotus, yes. And Nirvana Sutras. But these, though they teach the non-dualism of the world truth and the superior truth, say nothing about the mantras and mudras. Oh, here we go. This goes back to Shan Wu Wei and his influences. This idea that we have to drag along these old ancient traditions, or any right, it's mind-boggling, right? But it's not that Chikaku didn't know better. It's that he knows how people love their traditions. So he can shake up the powers that be by simply claiming that if we just put these things in, these mantras and mudras, then we have the complete teachings, and therefore I know better. The second is called esoteric teachings of both theory and practice. These are the doctrines found in the Mahavarachana, the Diamond Crown, and Sisiddhikara Sutras. Susidikara Sutras. These teach the non-dualism of worldly truth and the superior truth, and also explain the mantras and mudras, and we get our old traditions back. This essentially means, Nichiren points out, that in regard to the relative superiority of the Lotus Sutra and the three true word sutras just mentioned, they agree in principle, both teaching the doctrine of 3,000 realms in a single moment of life, but mudras and mantras are not mentioned in the Lotus Sutra. The Lotus Sutra thus represents the esoteric teachings of theory, while the three true word sutras represent the esoteric teachings of both theory and practice. They are hence as far apart as heaven and earth or clouds and mud, say the commentaries. Moreover, Chikaku insists that this is no private interpretation of his own, but represents the essential view put forth by the Tripitaka master Shan Wu Wei in his commentary on the Mahavarachana Sutra. Now, you know, Shan Wu Wei changed his mind later in his life, but he's not paying attention to any of that. He's just citing this earlier documentations of Shan Wu Wei's, and thus giving his opinion more merit because it has this long history, right? What is escaping the people of Nichiren's time here, these are scholars, after all. I'm making some note of their political machinations because the world is still rife with this kind of activity, this superiority complex. Something either is or isn't, but and what Nichiren points out is in the latter half of the Lotus Sutra, it's the mic is dropped, the bomb is set. Look, it's Myoho Rengekyo. This is what you do. It's permanently existing, and it's now in your life. You activate it, you invoke it, Myoho Rengekyo. It's in the Lotus Sutra, but it's not spelled out in quite those words. It's given as an experience of it. So there's room in the documentation for these people to suggest that, listen, mantras and mudras and hand positions, that's a real physical thing that you and I can see. And so with that tradition, we can practice these things in this life. And so it's more meaningful, and therefore the more enlightened view of the teachings. Complete malarkey. Mudras and mantras goes way back, even well beyond Buddhism. This goes back to Vedic teachings. But all of it is about mind and body connection and symbolism. And it had its place. It was part of the development of humans, not only Buddhism or Hinduism for that matter. But it doesn't belong in the latter teachings. It doesn't belong in the at the pinnacle of Buddhist realization. You already understand mind and body. You understand mind and environment, all of it. Why now are you going back to this, almost said, child's play? All right. And we've gone quite a while. I wanted to cover as much as I could in this section because it's really focused on this. The problem of lineage, when you don't have a lot of educational connectivity amongst the people, when we're still living in a time here where in Nichiren, where even up to almost present day, only in the last few hundred years have world civilizations been able to communicate knowledge and documentation on anything broadly. It's really a recent event in human history. It's easy to forget that. It's easy to forget that Nichiren didn't have a cell phone, Or, you know that you, do you remember that Amazon.com started as the world's largest online library where you could find any book? They had strong ties with the Library of Congress, and anyway, that's what Amazon was, a bookstore. So, I know it's incredible to think back. That wasn't that long ago. Now there's nothing you can't find somehow. They're connected to everything. Anyway, I'm just saying that information and how to think about information, this is the real thing. Once, see, now we have a plethora of information, so much so that people are making up information left and right. That is nothing but distraction. But if you're not good at discerning what is real, observable, experiential truth from all kinds of fanciful talk, if you can't tell the difference, then you're going to be out of control of your own life. You're going to be easily manipulated and pushed this way and that way. Your emotions are going to go sky high and rock bottom all the time. You'll be a mess, a roller coaster of emotions. You will not be able to master your life. We want to master our lives because we want our lives to be the best expression of what we can experience in life. And by doing that, be a positive influence to others. That's why we're here. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your support. I look forward to the next one. Namo myoho renge kyo. Take care.